You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio. WordPress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Monday edition. Tomorrow I will be covering the results of the summit meeting in Singapore. The meeting starts in a few hours. It's in the morning in Singapore. It starts at 9 p.m. sharp. So we're 4 or 5 hours away from it starting. Now, I'm not either optimistic or pessimistic, and I think I have been a negotiator, and I think Donald Trump is right. You can pretty much size up, let's say, the tone to the direction of a negotiations, not so much in the first minute, but fairly early. And that only comes with experience. And we're dealing with someone that is insecure, and that's always a bad situation. I think he's under a lot of pressure, though, from Communist China. Because Communist China gave him the resources, the money, the technology, the know-how to have the nuclear capability. It's really a problem of Communist China to rein in North Korea. And he's not going to give up his missiles as well as his nuclear weapons unless he gets something significant in exchange. And it doesn't mean coming from the United States. It means coming from Communist China. So while we have little leverage other than out-and-out war, I don't think he wants war. I don't think Communist China, Japan, South Korea, or the United States want war. But we do not want, it's in the United States' national interest to rein in and stop a nuclear arms race, both in the Far East and in the Middle East. And you got to connect North Korea with the Islamic Republic of Iran. So I'm going to get into that in more detail tomorrow. This is a very and very important summit. I hope it goes well, but you're not going to get a signed agreement. It's going to be really take, I would say, 1 to 2 years to finally negotiate something if North Korea wants to negotiate. And what Donald Trump early on is trying to determine is, are they negotiating in good faith? Because if they're not, he's perfectly correct in leaving. You see, in the past, what North Korea would do is they would agree not to test for a period of time in exchange for aid, foreign aid, and then 6 or 7 years later, start testing and say, you got to give us more. It's like a blackmailer. That's not going to happen this time. And the only nation, in my opinion, that can force, and I mean force, North Korea to denuclearize, in other words, destroy its nuclear weapons, destroy its long range, and I will say also intermediate range, because North Korea is near Japan. Both of those need to happen. They need to be destroyed. They need to be monitored. All the details have to be spelled out. It has to definitely be verifiable and irreversible. And then we'll see what happens. Now, ideally, what the North and the South should end the war, that might happen. That might be a surprise tomorrow. I don't know. But it could. And ultimately reunite, but that's going to take many, many years. And you're dealing, like I said, with a very insecure leader. It's an oligarchy. There's only a few people, maybe a couple of thousand, that run the country, and it's a totalitarian regime. You don't want to live there. You don't want to visit there. You don't want to work there. You want to escape from that country. It's a brutal dictatorship. So you're dealing with someone is a tyrant, dictator. You can't trust him. He's young, and people make mistakes when they're young. We'll see. I wish President Trump and the U.S. negotiating team well. I hope they do succeed, but I don't have any either high or low expectations. It's largely depends on what North Korea is willing to do. And that depends on the pressure that's brought primarily by the communist Chinese, because they gave him the technology, they gave him the know-how, they gave him the resources, the money to do it. And now they either fix the problem or, and this leads into my next story, they're going to face the consequences in terms of trade. Because I think the pressure was brought on communist China by the United States, pointing out it is your problem. And if you don't clean it up, we will place either import quotas, tariffs. I much prefer a total and complete embargo on all trade with China, both coming in and going out. Those are the stakes. You don't say that in public, though. You say that in private. And I think there's no accident that President Trump has used the phrase maximum pressure. Now, most people think it's maximum pressure against North Korea. That's true. But who really has the leverage and can bring pressure on North Korea? That's communist China, and that means you have to bring pressure on them. We've had, well, since 2002, when they joined the World Trade Organizations, the deficits with communist China have gone up, up, and up. And the biggest culprit in not having free and fair trade is communist China. Now, the United States has deficits with trade deficits with a number of countries. I'm generally not concerned about trade deficits. What I'm concerned is where a nation is deliberately cheating and not living up to the agreements that we have with them. And they're not. They're stealing our intellectual property. They're engaged in what's called non-tariff. They have some tariffs, but the biggest problem is non-tariff barriers. And Trump, during the campaign, emphasized currency manipulation, but there are others. And my big complaint in terms of Trump, he needs to educate the American people. If he's going to make this a key issue, and he is making it a key issue, he needs to renegotiate the agreements with other nations, including China. But he needs to explain how we are taken advantage of by nations such as China, Japan, Germany, and others, Mexico included. And that means negotiation, negotiation, negotiation. There are things they do that we don't like, and there are some things that we do that they don't like. Generally, the tariffs that the United States have are low. Historically, they're lower than they ever been. But there are other nations that have been taking advantage of us. That's why I'm not for these multilateral trade negotiations. I'm very much in bilateral agreements. And I need to emphasize something. You don't need an agreement to have fair trade. You don't. And what I mean by that, free and fair trade, and Donald Trump more or less said this. Now I'm going to paraphrase it and add something. There's no barriers, no tariffs. When I mean, let me go back to barriers. What are barriers to trade? There are in two categories. Tariff barriers, where one nation puts a high tariff on, let's say, U.S. imports into their country. They put a high tariff on, and when they have a high tariff, that means they don't buy from us. The citizens, the consumers, that producers of that nation, but don't buy our goods and or services. So you have to look at the tariff situation. And generally, tariffs have been going down and down and down, especially in the United States, but in other countries. But you also have to look at non-tariff barriers, such as currency manipulation, and that's probably the biggest and the hardest to get a handle on. You see, for a period of time, over 10 years, communist China was manipulating their currency and making it their value of the currency a lot less, which means that their exports to the United States were cheap. That puts U.S. producers at a disadvantage vis-a-vis China. Now, they've reversed that in the last couple of years, but at any time, they could go back doing it. And other nations do it, and the United States has done it. So you need to look at both tariffs and non-tariff barriers to trade. Now, Donald Trump has said no tariffs, no import quotas, and no subsidies. And that last one needs to be said, because what communist China has done, and we've done it too, most nations do that, provide subsidies to selective industries. It's called industrial policy. Most nations subsidize agriculture, as we do. Now, do we subsidize all agriculture? No. Only given the number of crops, it's only a few, but it's the important ones, wheat and corn and others, but those are the two biggies. And what other nations do is they try to protect their farmers. How do they protect their farmers? One way is higher tariffs and non-tariff barriers that makes it difficult or impossible for agricultural goods to enter, or they can enter a country, but the tariffs are so high that many people just aren't going to buy it, so there's not much sales. The United States agriculture sector, especially in time of war, has been the breadbasket of the world. But what happens is after the war is over and you get back to a normal situation, then agriculture comes back, and then what happens? Agriculture exports fall. So the important point I'm trying to make is any nation, the United States unilaterally could get rid of, but remember, this is very much a political question, all its tariffs, all its quotas, all its subsidies, and the few non-tariff barriers we have, including manipulating our currency, that's done. And no agreements required. Now, usually the reason why you have an agreement is, especially with the undeveloped countries, they don't want any of our goods in, or only selective ones. So they place very high tariffs. And the initial argument is infant industry. We have to, for example, develop our steel industry. That's what the United States has done and other nations do. So Donald Trump is not a purist, and that's he makes statements that would give you the idea maybe he is. Maybe deep down Donald Trump is truly a free trader. But the reason why he's insisting on fair trade, and this is important, is he thinks, and I think on balance he is, that the United States has been taken advantage of. The people of the United States and the United States have been taken advantage of. And he's going to put a stop to it. He's going to put a stop to it, not so much in a trade war, but in a trade agreement negotiation. Ideally, what I would say is do it country by country, and and spell out to the American people where we're being taken advantage of, and spell out what we want that nation to do, whether it's communist China, Japan, Germany, Mexico, and most of the nations have a small surplus with us. I'm not worried about the small surpluses. And the reason is very simple. I'll give you a real simple example. 2 weeks ago, I went to a place that has repaired my shoes, and they do a very good job. The price is just a little high, but okay. Now he makes me pay in advance. I had two pairs of shoes. I wanted full soles and heels, and it's $55 each for $110. Now some people would go buy a new shoe, and that's your right, and that's what I need to emphasize. It's up to you what you want to do. Do you want to spend the money on new shoes that when they wear out, throw them out? Or do you want to repair shoes if they're good shoes? I have always had good shoes and I repair them. But that's consumer sovereignty. That's my preference. I paid the money and I picked them up last Friday. Am I concerned with a balance of trade? See, I'm in a deficit situation. He didn't buy anything from me. He has never bought a single thing from me. That's why it's not important to me, because I do business with a lot of Kroger's never, you know, I'm a customer, regular customer Kroger. Kroger has never done any business with me. I've done a lot of business with Kroger and Walmart and a little bit with Target and Penny, but they're overpriced. I'm real selective on the last two. Really, only if it's a sale or a good, I like the design. Again, it's consumer sovereignty that's important. What's important is competition, maximum competition, and let the consumers have the freedom to choose what they buy. I'm a free trader, more to the right. I don't know if you say right or the left, but more than Trump is. See, where I would go after the nations that are really taking advantage of, and then be very tough on them in terms of negotiations, and do it bilaterally, country by country. Takes time. And why country by country? Because if someone is taking advantage of you and it becomes known, then you call them up and say, guess what? We're going to have to renegotiate this because you're breaking our agreement. You are breaking our agreement. If you don't stop it, then we're going to cancel the agreement. And that's what you need to do. The United States has been the suckers. It has. Now, other nations would disagree with us, but I'm giving you my point of view. Ideally, you would want every nation to have no tariffs, No barriers to trade, no quotas, no embargoes, and also don't forget the subsidies. It's the subsidies that are the hardest to really get rid of. Now, my point of view is if a nation wants to subsidize an industry, fine. That makes it cheaper for their goods coming to the United States. Who is subsidizing various industries in China? The Communist Party is. But where do they get the money from? It's the Chinese workers. And what does that mean? U.S. consumers get much lower prices. What's the problem with that? It makes it next to impossible in certain industries for U.S. companies to compete. So there's a trade-off there. I'm generally side with the consumers, but it's a case-by-case situation, and it changes. It's dynamic. It changes over time. And it's about time we had a president that's emphasizing this. It's getting the establishment all shook up because they favor the status quo. Now, what happened at the G7? Overall, it was I view the G7, formerly the G8 with Russia in it, it's an opportunity for world leaders to discuss a broad range of issues. It's an opportunity to talk at the highest level. I'm all in favor of these kind of summits. But you're generally not going to get agreement on anything. I think that's ridiculous. So it's difficult to come up, and what these summits usually do at the end, they have a communique. They publish it, and I have it on my website. If you're interested in read it, go to promptpops.wordpress.com. And the people that are advising Trump get together with the advisors of the other world leaders and draft this communique. My understanding, based on the U.S. representatives, they had agreed to the final draft of the communique. And Trump was definitely going to sign it. Definitely going to sign it. Keep in mind, there are a lot of general statements here. And you're trying to emphasize agreement. And that's what it did. You can read it for yourself, like I say. So the United States, in principle, had agreed with the draft. They had published a draft. And then what happened? Each of the leaders has a final statement to make. Let me play some, not the entire, but Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada's statement.
I highlighted directly to the President that Canadians did not take it lightly, that the United States has moved forward with significant tariffs on our steel and aluminum industry, particularly did not take lightly the fact that it's based on a national security reason that for Canadians who either themselves or whose parents or community members have stood shoulder to shoulder with American soldiers in far-off lands and conflicts from the First World War onwards, that it's kind of insulting. And I highlighted that it was not helping in our renegotiation of NAFTA, and that it would be with regret, but it would be with absolute certainty and firmness that we move forward with retaliatory measures on July 1st, applying equivalent tariffs to the ones that the Americans have unjustly applied to us.
Now, I'm going to make two big points. Where was Donald Trump? He left early. Why? He had to fly to Singapore. It's a long, long flight, even on Air Force One. And he left thinking that they had an agreement on the communique. And then the Canadian Prime Minister says this. This was for very much everything is politics for consumption in Canada. He couldn't push me around. He should have said either nothing or very little. What he could have said, the United States and Canada have been negotiating, and they have, and they've made progress with both NAFTA and some of the tariffs. There's still some outstanding issues, but we'll continue to negotiate to try to reach a mutual acceptable agreement. And then shut up. He didn't do that. And this statement by Trudeau, it was considered insulting, a betrayal of Trump and his team in terms of agreeing to the communique. The phrase was used backstabbing, and not only us, but the other nations in it. So Trump, being Trump, and here's where I agree with Trump, although I would do it a little differently. Everyone would. If you're going to punch or criticize me, I'm going to get in your face. And that's exactly what he did. And he refused to sign the communique. You're going to make this statement as I'm going to to Singapore to negotiate or try to negotiate, get started, denuclearization of Korea. He's going to be tough with Kim, the dictator of North Korea. The timing was terrible on this. And he could have, how should I say this, I'm talking the prime minister, been more diplomatic. So for that matter, could Trump. But I could see where he is upset. I would be upset. I'm sure he said that SOB. I agreed to sign the communique. We had a very productive, good meeting. We've had productive negotiations with Canada. We still have our differences, but we continue to negotiate. And then he pulls this as I'm on my way to Singapore. Well, I think the prime minister is a young man, but he's a fool. And yes, the Trump team pushed back. Let's listen to Larry Kudlow.
Well, to be honest with you, Prime Minister Trudeau, who, by the way, I respect, I've worked with him in good faith, getting through a good communique on Friday and Saturday. So he holds a press conference. The president's barely out of there on the plane to North Korea, and he starts insulting us. You know, he starts talking about U.S. is insulting Canada. Canada, are not going to be pushed around.
He was talking about the U.S. tariffs.
That's correct. Well, and in general, okay, it was an attack on the president. We're going to have retaliatory tariffs now. These are things that Prime Minister said before, basically, but he didn't say them before after a successful G7 communique where President Trump and the others all worked in good faith to put a statement together, which, by the way, almost nobody expected to happen. In fact, reporters were asking me before the trip whether the president was going to show up at all. He did. He negotiated. He directed his team, myself and others. We worked it out. We used good language that was acceptable.
And then the president reneged on that G7 statement.
No, I'm sorry. And then Trudeau decided to attack the president. That's the key point. And yes, you know, if you attack this president, he's going to fight back. But here's the key point, Margaret. President is going to negotiate with Kim of North Korea in Singapore. It is a historic negotiation. And there is no way this president is not going to stand strong, number one. He's not going to allow other people to suddenly take pot shots at him hours before that summit. And number two, Trudeau should have known better.
Who picked a public
Trudeau
fight with
betrayed.
A friend to impress an enemy?
Well, hey, who picked the fight?
But
I'm arguing Trudeau picked the fight.
That was Larry Kudlow on Face the Nation. I think Larry's right. And let me just say something. I was a regular listener of when he was on television, also on his radio show. About 90% of the time, I agree with Larry Kudlow, and I know he's a free trader. I know where he's at, and he has changed his position on immigration because that was the biggest difference. And I was somewhat amazed that he finally was won over in terms of you got to protect the American worker and our sovereignty. But for many, many years, he was part of this open borders crowd, and then he, I guess, got religion. Usually, I agree with Larry Kudlow, and I agree here. Trudeau should have known better. Exactly. He should have known better. And what is the media doing? And you're seeing a little bit here. It was Trump's fault. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. You pick your fights carefully, and this timing was incredibly bad. And I'm talking about Prime Minister Trudeau. He should never have done it when the President of the United States is going to meet Kim from North Korea, Kim Jong-un, to try to get that nation, hopefully with the assistance of Communist China, to destroy their nuclear weapons and missiles. Missiles, by the way, if he were successful in developing both the weapons and the missiles, not only could hit the United States, it could conceivably hit Canada, as well as of our other allies, Japan, South Korea, the Philippines, on and on and on. The timing was terrible. The language was terrible. He could have said something, how should I say, that was non-controversial. He chose this for domestic political reasons. Ultimately, I think some kind of deal, agreement, is going to be worked out. It might take another year or two. I always said you got to get people's attention. And ladies and gentlemen, I have negotiated with Canada. I just thought of that when they were considering buying the F-16 from us. We lost the contract. McDonnell Douglas, now Boeing, won it. Competition is good. And nations as well as consumers should have the freedom to choose what's in their best interest that meets their preferences. So I'm definitely for free trade, as is Kudlow, but for those nations that have much higher tariffs on us, have non-tariff barriers such as currency manipulation to the extent their central bank does that, and others, making it impossible to sell goods. There can be licensing, there can be regulations, and most importantly, subsidies. So I'm glad that Donald Trump hit back and hit back hard. I think he had little choice. But what's annoying is our media saying, well, Trudeau was right and Trump was wrong. No, what's wrong is there are many. And see, Canada is not the worst offender. Look at the deficits. And that's where I think there's reason, in my mind, for Canada and the U.S. to finally come up with an agreement. You see, in any negotiations, if both parties are negotiating in good faith, you're going to get a final resolution that's somewhere in the middle. No one is happy with a good negotiation. Neither party is happy. Some points you win, some points they win. And when you've had a successful talks, both at the summit and prior to it, and making progress, this is not helpful. It's not helpful at all. And yes, Kudlow was attacking the prime minister. He should be attacked. This will be a one-day story, though, and that's what I'm going to say. And our big lie media, the television networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, as well as CNN, they can spin it any way they like, but talk to American farmers, especially dairy farmers in Wisconsin and other states. And I want to emphasize, both sides can cherry pick examples of high tariffs, and you need to be careful on that. What you need to look at is the entire picture. In some areas, we win. Some areas, Canada wins. But both nations win, consumers and producers, where you're as close to free trade as possible. In other words, no tariffs, no quotas, and no subsidies. It's the subsidies that are seldom mentioned, and we do it. We still subsidize our agricultural, and that's why agriculture is usually one of the problem areas, because the politicians want to protect their farmers. That's true of France. It's true of Canada. It's true of the United States. It's true of Mexico. So this was a flap. Now, what I've noticed, and I haven't come up with the clip, and I'm running out of time, and once I really looked for it but couldn't find it. Maybe it's not on video. That's what I suspect. Donald Trump made a very clear, what I would call definitely a free trade statement, with this no tariffs, no quotas, no subsidies. And if every nation would agree with that, sign on the dotted line tomorrow. Now, do you need agreement? And that's the point I want to emphasize. Any country can do this unilaterally, and that's what the United States should do. I would do it unilaterally, get rid of all tariffs, all quotas, all subsidies. It's easier to say than done. Because why? Who is going to fight you right off the bat? Who is going to fight you in Congress? Oh, yes, the farmers with their subsidies, the ones that get it, are going to fight you. But there are other industries that have different types of subsidies. And they don't have to be cash payments. They could be loan guarantees. That's one common thing that's done. The government will guarantee the loan. That's a subsidy. That means you pay less in interest than if you didn't have the subsidy. There are many ways to subsidize besides cash payments, and you need to keep that in mind. But I'm totally against any and all subsidies to corporations or individuals. But you'll get resistance from those that believe in government intervention in the economy. That's the Democratic Party and many, many Republicans. And you have the same problem abroad. And what's happening today is many of the definitely left-to-center parties have moved further and further to the left. And as they do, what happens? They start to lose elections. And it's happening in the United States. And it's happening abroad, Germany, for example, Italy, other nations. And you have to understand that the radical left, to the extent that is successful in pushing what used to be a dominant party in this country further to the left, further towards socialism, further towards a welfare state, they lose their political base, and you tend to get what we had in the United States, the election of President Donald Trump. And that will continue. You see, both what the Democratic Party is doing is trying to replace its voter base with illegal aliens. They have abandoned their traditional base of the American worker. And the American worker has woke up to that fact. And because Donald Trump pushed the illegal alien invasion of the United States as his number one issue, pushing for the building of a big, beautiful wall, roughly a 2,000-mile wall, although you don't need entirely 2,000 miles. Not a mile has been built, and President Trump better, if he wants to get reelected president, he has to deliver on that wall. And right now, the Democrats, together with a lot of Republicans, the D and F Republicans, are trying to draft an amnesty bill for many of those illegal aliens. If they do that, the American people will vote out of office Democrats and Republicans should they be successful in passing that bill. And that's what I'd recommend. Anyone in Congress or the Senate that votes for amnesty for illegal aliens should be voted out of office. The Democratic Party is trying to import illegal aliens and ultimately give them citizenship. Amnesty is just a code word for citizenship. And once that happened, you can kiss this country goodbye. But I'm fighting it, and so are the majority of the American people that are opposed to amnesty or citizenship or a pathway to citizenship or legal status for the 30 to 60 million illegal aliens that are here. And because the word has gone out, what has happened? As the U.S. economy is booming, and as many of them become aware, some of them are aware, what's happening in Congress, you've had a spike up in illegal immigration. Doesn't surprise me. You know, it got as high as, I think, about 1.6 million in terms of apprehensions. The average for many years was 1 million, sometimes much higher than 1 million, sometimes lower. The reason why that's important, for every one apprehension, there's a minimum of 3 that get away. So we could have, very well have, another surge of illegal aliens into the United States. What the American people are expecting the wall to do is to stop that cold and then deport, and it's going to take at least 10 years. It took over 20 years to get to 30 to 60 million. No one knows what the exact number is. The government should, but they're not talking. And Donald Trump in his campaign promised to roll that back. They all have to go home. Now, he's focused so far on the so-called criminal illegal aliens. But I maintain they're all criminal illegal aliens because they've, first time they come to the country without presenting their papers, they're committing a misdemeanor. The second time it's a felony. Once they're here, they buy fraudulent papers, fake papers, so they can work here, and then they work here. Both of those are felonies. Then the employer that hires them, including many governments, city, state, county, schools, colleges, and the federal government, they're committing crimes, as well as primarily businesses that take advantage of the illegal aliens. What the American people are demanding and demanding and demanding, and it's not just in the United States, it's also in Europe, is that immigration laws be enforced. And if the radical left, whether it's in the United States or in Europe, wants to be for open borders, there's going to be a backlash because the majority of the American people, as well as the European people in various nations, are against this. So when people of the left push this agenda, they're going to marginalize themselves, and they're going to have a history of losing elections. There's a phrase in Texas, dance with the one who brought you to the dance. I didn't say it correctly. Who largely gave victories to the Democratic Party for many, many decades? It's the American worker, whether unionized or not. Low-income and middle-income Americans gave them majority. But they believe now that their interests, concerns with immigration have been ignored, beyond ignored. They're more concerned about illegal aliens and getting citizenship for them. than the concerns of the American people for good-paying jobs and also stopping the crime and drugs that come with this, as well as the national security problems. See, immigration is a national security issue, a crime issue, a drug issue, but foremost, a job issue. So this trade in human bodies, this illegal trade, needs to be stopped. And you better believe that the socialist, leftist parties in the United States and Canada are pushing it. Now, I only briefly covered the summit. And like I said, I view this as a talk fest. I think it's always useful to exchange ideas because you will change people's opinions. It happens all the time. As people learn additional facts and hear other people respond to it, they'll change their minds. In many cases, they don't change their minds. I thought it was surprising that they could agree to a joint communique. Initially, I thought they're not going to agree to anything. And Trump came a little late, had to leave a little early, but generally participated in the exchange of ideas, and his people came up with a mutually acceptable draft. All the nations there could agree with it. We're going to sign it. And then we have the Prime Minister of Canada playing politics, local politics. Well, I don't think that's helpful. It wasn't helpful to the President of the United States. That's why he hit back and hit back hard. And that's just going to take longer to come to some kind of agreement. Now, what Canada is upset with is that the steel and aluminum tariffs, the basis for it, supposedly was national security. I don't totally at all, not totally, I don't agree with that logic, and that's Trump's logic, for the simple reason, roughly, and the number varies from year to year, about 70% of the steel that we use in the United States is produced domestically. But that number has varied, 75% sometimes. It's going to go up and down. And a lot of it comes from Canada and other nations. You got to look at the big picture and what's the balancing act you're doing. And you got to periodically, not necessarily every year, but maybe every 3 years or 5 years, meet and discuss. And if there's something that's of concern where one party feels they're truly not being fairly treated, that needs to be discussed and the agreement needs to be changed. And that's definitely the situation with the North Atlantic Free Trade Agreement. I don't like the name of it because many of these agreements go way beyond trade. That's seldom mentioned. So that's why I favor bilateral country-to-country trade agreements where the agreement is dealing with trade, not anything else. So keep that in mind. And I was pleasantly surprised that President Trump made what I considered and what many other people are pointing out was a rather strong advocacy of free trade. No tariffs, no quotas, no subsidies. That's a shorthand way to describe free trade. I think I would have added no barriers, no tariffs, no quotas, and no subsidies. Easier said than done. That should be the goal. Will you ever achieve that goal? Probably not. Why? Throughout the world, most of the world today has a government interventionist leadership. And I include Trump in that, by the way. I don't think he's a non-interventionist, by the way. I am. The government is too big, and that's my problem with the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. They're big government statist parties. More and more power has gone from the social sphere to the state. More and more social power has been transferred, and this has taken over 120 years, to the state. We need to reverse that, because as the state gets bigger and bigger and bigger, what happens? Taxes get higher and higher and higher. People have less freedom, and what I'm all about is free choice, especially for consumers as to what they buy, as well as producers. We don't need government intervention in the economy, and frankly, except for cases where we're attacked, I'm not for intervening in other countries. And the only exception to that is when our Congress declares war. And listen, we've intervened in country after country, several hundred of them, ever since the end of World War II. Oh, yeah, the United States intervenes in elections, the CIA does, sometimes successfully, sometimes not so successfully, failures. I'm in favor of a peaceful and prosperous economy, not a warfare and welfare state. And ladies and gentlemen, the United States is no longer a representative republic. It is an empire. And what motivates this empire is intervention, especially abroad. And that's why today the United States and its people are feared, because we've intervened and killed people, wounded people. Now, you can make the case for the intervention. They always do. But if we had a strong national defense defending a representative republic, we wouldn't need a massive military to intervene in country after country after country. That is just one of the reasons government spending is out of control. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the Achilles heel of not only Donald Trump's attempt to reduce regulation and taxes. He must address and truly cut government spending, and I have not seen it. I'm results-oriented, as is Donald Trump. But his challenge is he faces both the Democratic Party and a Republican Party who want to not only increase the scope and role of the government, but the size of the government. And there's little difference in the parties. They're not for limited government. They're not for a representative republic. They're for a massive government, a massive state that intervenes not only in the U.S. economy, but abroad. It's statism ran amok, and it doesn't end well. Because we're paying the bills today by increasing the debt every single year. We run massive deficits, hundreds of billions of dollars every year. And the only way we can pay those bills is to borrow the money. And it will end sometime between now and 2040, most likely around 2028 or 2030. Because the national debt soon will be over $21 trillion, and the unfunded liabilities are anywhere from $100 trillion to $200 trillion, depending on what actuarial assumptions you want to make. In other words, we have obligations that we did not fund, put money aside. Nations that do this ultimately end up like Greece. And you'll see spikes in interest rates and maybe even default, although we can somewhat finesse that. But the value of your money will go down, down, and down, and you'll see it in inflation, and it can get out of control. I hope it doesn't. The last thing this country needs is a hyperinflation that will destroy the country. We're not there yet, but we're doing very little to slow it down. And Donald Trump is not addressing it. Simply, he doesn't have the votes, because the Democratic Party, together with the D and F Republicans, I'm referring to a conservative review that rates Democrats, Republicans, representatives, senators. If you add the Democrats and the Republicans that are D and F and many of the C's, they're giving us massive government. That's why I don't vote Democrat or Republican anymore. The voter base of both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are leaving both parties because they know the political elitist establishment in Washington, the leadership of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, are spending so much money, we're in the poorhouse. You don't hear that. But that's what we're doing. No family, no individual, no family, no school, no college, no city, no county, no state, no federal government can be run like this with massive hundreds of billions of dollars of deficits year after year after year after year. It's unsustainable. And eventually there's a day of reckoning. And the day of reckoning is, I would say, in the next 10 years. Maybe sooner, maybe later. I don't have a perfect predicting crystal ball here. And it depends very much on what you do to try to stop it. But where's the leadership in stopping these deficits? And guess what? Other nations have the same problem, if not worse. And who's in control? The defenders of the status quo. Are they going to change? No. Are they going to go for free trade? No. They're going to continue subsidizing their industries, their farmers, impose quotas if necessary, and engage in unfair trade. So at least I salute Donald Trump for making an attempt to renegotiate. But a much bigger problem that makes trade, how should I say this, a rounding error, is the fact that none of these nations are truly getting control of government spending at all levels, not only the central government, but all levels. In the United States, the state level, the county level, the city level, the school districts, the colleges. It doesn't end well. With that, I want to thank you for listening, and tomorrow I will get on the to the extent that we have additional information. I hope it goes well. If it goes well, this negotiation could go longer. It looks like this is just an initial meeting to see if both parties are serious. It could be a short meeting. Doesn't mean it's a failure, but all that means we need to continue to negotiate. Like I said, I was a negotiator. We'd have fact-finding meetings, and then we would negotiate and negotiate and negotiate. And I'm talking, when you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, that's important. Here we're talking the biggest threat faced by humankind, that is the spread, a nuclear arms race that could spread throughout the Far East and the Middle East. And the risk is, to the extent that we do have that, that's what Trump is trying to prevent. And I applaud him for taking this on. It should have been taken on a lot sooner. But to the extent that it can be successful, that prevents, God forbid, a terrorist attack in either Europe, on Israel, or the United States, where a nuclear weapon is used. So I pray for and hope the Trump negotiating team is successful, and this is just the first step of many successful steps to stop the spread of nuclear weapons around the world. Thank you for listening, and now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.